All right, welcome everybody to the Saturday morning Experience the Big Book. Today we're reading some special pages. We're picking up from where we were last week in Bill's story. These pages, every time I read them, I see something new. I find something new in them. And this is really where AA started. Ebby and Bill in Brooklyn in 1934 in his kitchen. And then we're going to see where Bill goes to the town's hospital and works the steps. And then we're going to see how Bill changed. Particularly important since we made the announcement that we lost one of our members this week from this disease. To me, it was really, when I got the text, it really hit me. Although I've lost my son and lost so many friends from this disease, but this was someone that I sat back there and tried to work the four-step with, called me all the time, and just could not stop drinking. And I actually said to Stu last week, I said, you know, this is somebody that needs to be locked up, to be put away from alcohol for a while. And then I got the text, he died. And it was really, he was a young man, and it's really sad, but it reminds me of my powerlessness today. It reminds me of the fatal nature of this disease. And it's very sobering that we're lucky we're here today. And we've been given a gift, like Ed says, and let's make the most of it. Let's let God work in our lives. So on page 10, Bill W. is trying to change his old ideas about God. And he had lived a self-centered life and never used God. And so he says in the middle of the page, and I want to get through where Bill finishes the steps today, so I hope I'll have time for some discussion. By the way, I'm getting a microphone for those listening on the podcast, so you won't hear rustling of papers anymore, and they'll be clear. I was probably the one rustling, so anyway, forgive me. I'd always believed in a power greater than myself. I looked at that life. That line, I always believed in a power greater than myself too, but I never used it. So I was an agnostic. I was without knowledge of God. Belief is good, but knowledge is better, because then you have faith. I'd often pondered these things. I was not an atheist. Few people really are, for that means blind faith in the strange proposition the universe originated in a cipher and aimlessly rushes nowhere. His intellectual heroes were the chemists, the astronomers, the evolutionists. They suggested vast laws and forces at work. Despite contrary indications, himself, I had little doubt that a mighty purpose and rhythm underlay all. How could there be so much of precise and immutable law and no intelligence? I simply had to believe in a spirit of the universe who knew neither time nor limitation. I think that's another thing. I don't think God has time. Time's not relevant to God. So we want things to done on our time, but God's time is different. I believe that. But that was far as I had gone. And I wrote, he never reached out to this power. With ministers in the world's religion, I parted right there. When they talked of a God personal to me, and that's what we talk about here, a God personal to us, right? Who was love, superhuman strength, and direction. So there's a good definition of God. Love, superhuman strength, and direction. He became irritated. My mind snapped shut against such a theory. But why? Why would he become irritated? Snapped against the God of love, superhuman strength, and direction. And I wrote, he snapped his mind shut against it. How'd that work for him? And why? Because then he would have to give up running the show. He couldn't be in charge anymore. To Christ, I like this. This is like Bill's sense of humor. To Christ, I conceded the certainty of a great man. Wasn't that nice of him? Not too closely followed by those who claimed him. His moral teaching, most excellent. Now, this is an alcoholic. I think this is a definition of an alcoholic right here. For myself, I had adopted those parts which seemed convenient and not too difficult. The rest I disregarded. I mean, it's beautifully written, but I think it's true. Now, do people do that with the steps? Do people do that with the program of recovery, the steps or the program of recovery? I'm going to write a thought about what the program is, because I go to so many meetings and people talk about being in the program. And I'm going to give my thoughts on what the program is, because it says, we read it tonight, the 12 steps are a program of recovery. If you're in the program, you're working the steps. That's different than being in the fellowship. The wars which had been fought, now here he's looking at how God couldn't work in the world if all these bad things are happening. Judging from what he had seen, he couldn't believe that God was actually working in human affairs. He's talked about the devil, and he seemed the boss universal, and he certainly had me. So what is the devil that had me when I came in? It was me. It was my delusion that I was in charge of my life. And the delusion that if I managed things well, everything would be great. And I separated from God, and I listened to Chuck Chamberlain. I listened to him quite a bit. And he talks about we live in a reality that we create. And we really can't deny the existence of our true reality, but we try with conscious separation. Then we live in it, and then it doesn't work. And here we go. But my friend sat before me, and he made the point-blank declaration that God had done for him what he could not do for himself. Now, that's a statement that's in this book several times. And God had done for him what he could not do for himself was he was sober. Now, Ebby was sober 60 days when he went to Bill. What if the Oxford group had said, you're only 60 days, you can't go work with somebody? Well, we wouldn't be here today. His human will had failed. We talk about that a lot. My willpower will never work, because when the mind is trying to fight the emotions will always win. I like something Chuck C said today. He said, we're not emotionally immature people. We are sensitive people, very sensitive. Doctors have pronounced him incurable. I'm incurable with my own power. Society was about to lock himself up. Like myself, he had admitted complete defeat. So Bill had admitted complete defeat, and we read about that on page 8, but Bill had no solution. And he knew what the problem was. The doctor had told him his problem. He had an allergy of the body, and he had obsession of the mind. But then Abby had been raised from the dead, suddenly taken from the scrap heap to a level of life better than the best he had ever known. So Bill's looking at Abby. Had this power originated in him? Obviously it had not. There had been no more power in him than there was in me at that moment, and this was none at all. Remember, we talk on page 45, lack of power is our dilemma. I did not have a power by which to live. And we are an example of that to others. That's where the power of the fellowship is. People who had no power are now sitting here with a power so they don't have to drink today. And that's an example of the power that's available to you if you work the steps. That floored me. It began to look as though religious people were right after all. Here was something at work in the human heart. Now notice he doesn't say the human mind. He says the human heart. Because our mind is what killed us, remember? Which had done the impossible. My ideas about miracles were drastically revised right then. A miracle, I looked up the definition, is an extraordinary event manifesting divine intervention in human affairs. And I think we're all miracles here. I think it's a miracle when someone can even get here to AA for the first meeting, right, Ed? I mean, that is a miracle. We don't give enough credit to the miracle of just being able to get sober for a day and get here. And that's divine intervention. Why did we stop one day? Why did we see the truth? Why did we hit bottom? It wasn't because I thought my way into bottom. It's because God's grace gave me the ability to see the truth. And we are the miracle. And we shouldn't forget that. Remember, it says we should not regret the past or shut the door on it. Remember, it says in is a family after it or wives, Linda, that our past is the greatest asset?
It's 124.
124. You'll look it up. You'll read it in a second. I saw that my friend was much more than inwardly reorganized. He was on a different footing. His roots grasped a new soil. Do you have it, Linda?
Yeah, page 124. Cling to the thought that in God's hands the dark past is the greatest possession you have, the key to life and happiness for others. With it, you can avert death and misery for them.
Powerful stuff.
With family afterward.
Yeah. Now, look, he said his roots graft the new soil. His roots, we use the word roots in this book. It says, selfish is self-centeredness. That was the root of my problem. The root of it was that it was in the wrong soil. It was in the Michael soil, not the God soil. And whenever my roots are in Michael's soil, the result of that plant doesn't look good, does it? It's got, on its leaves, it's got resentment, fear, and shame and guilt. The God soil looks a lot better. It's got peace, love, understanding, serenity, service. Despite the living example of my friend, there remained in me the vestiges of my old prejudice. And vestiges are a deep-seated feeling, no, a trace of something. And his prejudice is his prejudgment, his old idea. So unless Bill lets go of his old ideas, he's not going to make it. Remember, we have to let go of them absolutely. So let's see what happens to Bill. The word God still arouses a certain antipathy, which is a deep-seated feeling of dislike. He didn't like the word God. I wonder why. Because then he'd have to be accountable. And then he'd have to submit to something. And he'd have to submit his will to something besides Bill. And Bill had been a self-made man, right? He'd lived his whole life trying to be a success and to arrive and to be a leader. And what did it get him? He's in the kitchen table. He's drunk. He's dying. He didn't like the idea. Do we ask you what your ideas are when you come here? We don't ask you if you like this, don't we? We don't want your opinion. We just want to know if you want to do this. Now, we don't care what you think of it. We only care if you do it. And we suggest you do it if you don't have another plan. Now, we don't tell you to do this. We just say, if you've run out of plans that don't work, try this. And sometimes people never stop running out of plans. And so they never do it. He could go for conceptions as creative intelligence, universal mind, or spirit of nature, but he resisted the thought of a czar of the heavens, and a czar is a ruler, emperor, the higher power, the highest high. However loving his sway might be, just resisted it. I've since talked with scores of men who felt the same way. I think most alcoholics are this way. We believe in God, but we resist submitting to God for some reason. We don't know how to do that. It's not that we're bad people. We just don't know how to completely give up on ourselves. And my friend suggested what then seemed a novel idea, a new kind or different idea. And he said, why don't you choose your own conception of God? And so this is in italics. Remember, it's a squiggly writing. And your own conception of God. And the conception is the way in which something is perceived or regarded. So it's your conception. And I had people write it out that I work with, write out your conception of God. I said, keep it short. And my conception of God has changed a lot. It's just changed in the last week. Something happened and I had to get on my knees and ask God for help and submit, and the power came to me. It melted the icy intellectual mountain in which whose shadow I had lived. Now think of this, look at this image. He has an intellectual mountain, and he calls it ice. And he's in the shadow of this intellectual mountain. Our intellect, the mind of reason. It says we move from the shore of reason, we cross the bridge to the shore of faith. We have to give up the shore of reason to get to the shore of faith. And the bridge over it is the 12 steps. And I really like that analogy. He lived and shivered. He shivered for many years in this icy intellection, and he stood in the sunlight at last. So something had changed for Bill. This is where he's able to begin to give up on himself. Remember, for an alcoholic, that's really the hardest thing to do, is to make that first, the second, the third step where you begin to give up on yourself. So here's in italics. This is where he takes step two. It's only a matter of being willing to believe in a power greater than myself. That's all he had to do, be willing to believe in a power greater than himself, Nothing more was required of me to make my beginning. And he saw that growth could start from that point. Upon the foundation of complete willingness, I might build what I saw in my friend. What he saw in his friend was a spiritual change. And remember, we're building a structure in this book. He talks about it. And willingness is the foundation of this, complete willingness. And why do we become completely willing? Pain, suffering, humiliation, defeat. So when I see people fighting the steps, I said, well, are you still defeated today? You know, it's people, the ego regrows very quickly, right? And we forget how bad it was. We convince ourselves it wasn't that bad. Would I have it? Of course I would. And thus was I convinced that God is concerned with us humans when we want him enough. There was a big change that happened in Bill, just with this change in the way he looked at his higher power and his relationship with his higher power. At long last, I saw, I felt, I believed. And this line, convinced that God is concerned with us humans when we want him enough. Are we seeking God? That's where we're supposed to be, God seekers, can and will, if we seek him. What do I want today? Remember, it says the most important thing in your life is your relationship with God. Nothing should come above that. Scales of prejudice and pride fell from his eyes. He let go of his old ideas. He let go of his self. A new world came into view. He believed that there's a new world available if he tries to live under God's direction. And it gave him a lot of hope. And the real significance of my experience in the cathedral burst upon me. For a brief moment, I had needed and wanted God. There had been a humble willingness to have him with me, and he came. So he had that moment in the chapel in Winchester Cathedral when he was over there after the war. He had a humble willingness to have him, and he came. And then I think this happens to a lot of us. We come here, we have a humble willingness, and we feel this presence of God, and then look what we do. But soon the sense of his presence, his spiritual awakening, had been blotted out by worldly clamors, mostly those within myself. See, the ego rebuilds. We have to submit and submit to God and submit to the structure of our self-centeredness every day, every minute, or it's going to rebuild. So it had been ever since, how blind I had been. And I like this, we blot out the channel. We talked about the St. Francis prayer as the channel of our peace, right? And what we're going to bring into every situation. And who blocks it out? Me. So all we have to do is unblock that channel of the presence of God inside of me, and those things will come out. And what I bring into each situation is either Michael or God. And when I'm bringing God, I see the situation and act differently, and I bring Michael, it's not pretty. Now why I bring Michael in is because we have free will. But God also says we can seek him and come back to him at any time. So I can separate from God any minute. I've got the power, but I can let go. And if I seek him, he'll bring me right back to him. He was separated from alcohol for the last time. Treatment seemed wise, for I showed signs of delirium tremens. And then in the original manuscript, I looked it up. It says, I've not had a drink since, right after that line. But they moved it, and they changed a few words in here. I'll try to remember. Here's the powerful 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 paragraphs that really, they're such a powerful instruction to me, and they're powerful directions, and it's a powerful message. I humbly offered myself to God. Humbly, now he realizes that God is his higher power. He's seeking him with humility, with wanting to seek the presence of his creator from a person who's not the creator and has no power. As I then understood with him to do with me as he would, third step, I placed myself unreservedly under his care and direction. I do that all the time, but then I have to continue to do it because I can do it at 10 o'clock and at 10:30 I'm back into Michael and then I have to do it again. So this, basically the third step prayer for me, it goes on all day long. And then I have to do the 10th step all day long to follow through in my third step prayer. I like this. I admit it for the first time. This is the first time this self-made man, this really brilliant guy who'd done so much, for the first time, admitted that he was nothing without God. Without God, I'm lost. Now, how can you be lost without God? What are you don't know where you are? Well, I'm lost to his direction and power. And when I'm on my own, I really am lost. So Father Bill W. used the analogy that God is a magnet and we're a paperclip. And the closer the paperclip gets to the magnet, the more power we get. But the paperclip, if you move it away from the magnet, it has very little power. So where am I moving my paperclip today? Toward the magnet or away from it? I just thought of that. That's pretty good. I like that. I ruthlessly faced my sins. His sins are the blockages from God. That's what we do in the fourth step. We're going to look at the things that are blocking me from God. His thinking, his sinful thinking, and became willing. He's willing to have my newfound friend, that's a word for God, take them away, root and branch, 6 and 7. So he's doing 4, 5, 6, and 7 right here. I have not had a drink since. So here's where they put I'd not had a drink after he did 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7. Now the fifth he's actually is the next line. When Ebby came the vivis in me, I fully acquainted him with my problems and deficiencies. And we made a list of people I had hurt or toward whom I had resentment. Steps 8 and 9. People who have hurt or toward whom I had resentment. Now, he wrote, I expressed my entire willingness to approach these individuals, admitting my wrong. That's why we go. We admit our wrong. I like this speaker. He says, you go and you ask, you tell the person how you harmed them and you were wrong, and then you ask them what they think of this, what they think of it, and then you ask what you can do to make it right. Never was I to be critical of them. See, I have to change the way I see the people that I was angry at or towards whom I hurt, and I have to forgive them, and I have to see them differently. I was to right all such matters to the utmost of my ability. So you are not to hold anything back. We talk about that in steps 8 and 9, unless, of course, it's to harm someone or make it worse. So he's going to test his thinking by the new God consciousness. And here's a new word in the book. I never saw this before. Within. The consciousness is within him. It's already inside of us. He's connected to God. The God consciousness that's already inside of him. So all he's done now is unblock this power that's already inside of him. And then we talked about the word spiritual awakening. He's awakened to the spirit. He has a consciousness of God. And we talk about when we're asleep, I'm asleep to the spirit. The spirit's there, but I don't know that it's there. And that's what Chuck Chamberlain talked about, this reality I create in my mind that doesn't have God in it. And he talks about the circle, which is the world and everything in it. And then I'm out here. And how did I do that? I did it in my own mind. I created a world where there was no God consciousness, and it didn't work for me. Common sense would thus become uncommon sense. Now this is from page 86 we talked about today. I was to sit in the morning before the meeting about one of the meditations. I was to sit quietly when in doubt. I never used to do that. I still don't do it all the time. But this has to do with indecision or pausing. Remember, we pause when agitated or doubtful, or we face indecision during the day and we don't know the right course of action. And I did that, and I did get inspiration from God this week. I had something going on that I didn't know what to do. I had to sit quietly in doubt, asking only for direction and strength. That's all I want, is direction and strength from God to meet my problems as he would have me. So I need to know the direction. It says I may not know the right thought or action. I relax and take it easy, right? The right answers will come. So this is how he's going to test his God consciousness. Are the right answers going to come when he's in doubt? Never was I to pray for myself. We talked about that. Step 11, we read the information in the book. We talked about the 12 and 12 and the steps we took. Never to pray for myself, except as my requests bore on my usefulness to others. And sometimes we can justify our behavior and say it might be useful to others, or our prayers, but we have to look at that. What are our motives? And then if I do that, look at this line. Then I only might expect to receive. I'm only going to expect to receive if my prayers are only of how I can be of service, how I can acknowledge God's will and the power to carry that out. But that would be in great measure. Now, here's another great paragraph. We've read this a million times. Every time I read it, it just, I get something out of it, and it really is such powerful words to me. I don't know about to you. My friend promised. He promised that when these things were done, I would enter upon a new relationship with my Creator. Isn't that the promise of the book? Isn't that the whole book is a promise? This is a promise that if you do these things in here, you follow these steps, you follow the directions, you're going to enter upon a new relationship with your Creator. Now, what was that relationship with your Creator going to look like? What is it? What happens if you have that relationship? Well, we might ask people what happens, but here it tells you. I have the elements of a way of living which answered all my problems. So if I have a new relationship with my Creator by doing the steps, then I have all the elements of a way of life which answers all my problems. Think about that. And that's really true. If I have a relationship with God and I seek Him in the moment now, then my problems go away and He gives me the way to situation to look at. Isn't that what the Serenity Prayer is? Getting centered with God to see what you need to accept and what you need to change. Isn't that the St. Francis Prayer? Now here's what's required. We have the promise. We see what the promise looks like, the results of it, and then here's the requirement. So that's the way they write here. They give you the promise, they give you what it looks like, and then they tell you the warning, what you need to do. Warning, you need to have belief in the power of God, plus enough willingness, there's another word I didn't see, enough willingness, honesty, and humility to establish and maintain the new order of things, the new relationship with God. God's my director, remember? He's my Father, I'm His child. These are the essential requirements. So I need enough of this to establish this new order. Humility, willingness, and honesty. And isn't that what you get from the steps? All the steps is a form. Now, he's going to tell you what the steps actually do in the next sentence, next two sentences. So he says, simple. It seems pretty simple, doesn't it? But a price had to be paid. Nothing's free. There's no free lunch. It meant destruction of self-centeredness. So I need enough honesty, willingness, and humility to establish a new order of things, which is the destruction of my self-centeredness. And remember, it says selfishness, self-centeredness, that's the root of my problems. It's going to kill me. I must be rid of it. Remember that line? And it says, why? Because it's going to kill me. And it says God makes that possible. So the relationship with God is what destroys my self-centeredness. Now here's something I have to remember all the time. I don't do it all the time, but it's part of my daily 24 hours. I try to do this, but I don't always do it. But I must turn in all things to the Father of Light, who presides over us all. God's not plan B, right? God first. First things first. First seek the kingdom of God. It comes first. If I go to God first, things go better. When I go to me first, they don't look good. So how do I know when I'm not turning to God first, I'm turning to me? And remember, it says we turn our thoughts to others. We turn away. I have to turn away from my self-centeredness all the time. And if I do that, God will come in. It just happens. Turn away from it. Say, God, remove it. God, take care of me. It comes right away. It says these are revolutionary and drastic proposals, but the moment I fully accept them, remember, half measures aren't going to do us any good. Fully accepted them, the effect was electric. There was a sense of victory followed by peace and serenity I've never known. Do any of you have peace and serenity now? And you can be disturbed, but you can get peace and serenity by working the steps. You can get it all the time. Linda's nodding. I mean, it's a powerful thing that we know. I know my faith that if I turn to God in all things and I do these things, I get a sense of victory. I have peace and serenity. The only person that can keep me from having peace and serenity is me. That's a son of a bitch. I know it is. But it's true. Remember, if I'm disturbed, there's something wrong with me. Why? I'm seeing it through Michael. I'm seeing it through the wrong pair of glasses. And what AA does is give me a new pair of glasses, a way of living, a way of seeing the world. So nothing out there ever changes. I just change the lenses. Sandy Beach talks, we look at our resentments in our life and we see the slides on the wall. But the problem isn't the slides, it's what's the projector. It's who's projecting it. And then if you project it differently, the slides, they change. There's still the same slide, but you see it differently. And so I really get a lot out of that. Now, I'm going to finish up next week with the last three pages, which ties right into page 17, which Joe and Charlie says is the most important page for newcomers and everyone to know. And so we'll do that next week. It all ties together. So actually, I left plenty of time to discuss these powerful pages. Thank you.